All right, so on the air we have Stopping.
That's me.
Beaches.
That's you.
Yeah, that would be me. And our very special friend to Radio Statler, Radio Wonderland.
Hey, Radio Wonderland here, also known as Joshua, but please call me Radio Wonderland.
All right, so we had you in here at Hope 10. This is the 11th Hope, right?
Yes.
Yep, the 11th Hope.
Turning it up to 11.
Oh, I thought we were going up to 11.
Well, we're 11. Radio Statler. We're a little more.
We're a little more.
You're going to turn up to 11 tomorrow night. 11. Yeah, we always one up the general conference.
I mean, we have to.
Yes.
It's just, it's required.
Yeah.
Represent. Yeah, so you're performing.
I'm performing tomorrow night on the Hope Concerts program, which I think used to be known as the Chiptunes event.
Yeah.
I think they're expanding, I guess, the genres.
Well, they have to if they have me.
How would you define your music?
Oh, I think it's really good music, high quality, full of musicality.
It sounds like what someone says when they can't define their genre.
But I can. As far as a genre, I can describe it more than I can pigeonhole it.
Uh-huh.
But although I use technology and computers and programming, and the chiptunes people, if there can be said to be such a thing, seem to really like what I do, it definitely does not qualify as chiptunes.
You're not taking Nintendos and Game Boys and manipulating them, you're making music in another fashion.
Yeah, completely different.
How is it?
Well, I'm making my music by taking sounds off of live radio. Radio. I walk on with a boombox, which has an FM radio in it, and I tune into commercial FM stations, and sometimes AM, and cut them up in the computer and lay out these little bits of radio on a rhythmic grid so that it's funky, danceable, like techno.
Mm-hmm.
And I control the computer with a steering wheel from a Buick, and old shoes that I hit with drumsticks, and various other things.
Okay.
So it looks kind of like performance art, and I'm jumping around, and it's very much an improvisation, but it sounds kind of like experimental laptop techno music.
Okay. Now, before we were on air, you mentioned that since the last convention...
Conference?
Since the last conference... that you're working on, you finished a new album.
Yeah, and to show just how slow it can be to make an album, when I was here before, 2 years ago, I had, I guess you could say rough mixes, sketches, like rough edits / rough mixes of the tracks from the same album that I just finally finished and is coming out September 30th of this year.
Now, when you're creating an album, are you just like... feverishly scanning the airwaves for like the perfect tidbit? Like, what's your work process?
I'm not doing that. I am feverishly reviewing my concert recordings.
Okay.
So everything is taken from a live show.
Ah.
The idea to sit down and say, okay, now that I'm in the studio, let's get the perfect sample and do just the right thing with it. That's really contrary to the way
that doesn't
Radio
sound
Wonderland
like
works.
And
the name, we did say Radio Wonderland, that's right. So the challenge was to make myself sit down and review about 200 hours of music.
Mm-hmm.
And I did so focusing on what was funky, what were the best grooves.
Because
the original concept was, can I take random radio and in real time make a collage that's actually danceable? So I had this sort of like yardstick, which I guess you normally don't find with conceptual... soundscapey experimental stuff, but for me, will they dance? Is it really going to work as a groove? And it was sort of a question that I didn't have the answer to. And then in doing the programming and then performing and getting a little bit better at performing, I got the answer, which is yes, it's possible, you can do it. And so the album was can we have that?
I was just you should have sampled that.
I know. That's true, but it had its own suchness, you know? It was so perfect as it was. I kind of miss that sound.
We'll never hear it again, I hope.
Nothing exactly like it.
At least on the radio.
So the idea of the album was to see if these concerts that were fun and in front of people, also some of them were actually on the radio, So that's radio, made from radio. Could they sort of hold their own as pure audio, mm-hmm. as something that you listen to? And to do that, I basically edited them down. But every track on the album is made from one concert, and I didn't add any non-radio sounds. In fact, I didn't add any other sounds from different concerts. I just tripped over a cable, sort of.
So basically, you've gone through like hundreds of hours of your own performances and basically curated yourself. It's almost like a best of the last like 2 years? Or?
Kind of, yeah. The best of, and then each 30-minute concert, because they're usually about a half hour, got condensed to an album track that was like 4 to 6 minutes long.
Oh, interesting.
And heavily edited and EQ'd and processed like it was a pop record. Like, okay, let's, without adding any non-radio sounds, let's mix this with what we know we can do in a studio, mm-hmm. especially with a low end. Let's make this a full-sounding mix. And it was really necessary because when I'm on stage and it's in a big club and it's cranking and people are excited and I'm jumping around, you feel the groove. And no one was standing around saying, you know, this mix isn't really full range. It doesn't seem like they had multi-tracks. Mm-hmm. It would be better if they had some kind of compression on the kick to sort of make it speak without overpowering. People don't feel that. They just are getting with the groove and it's loud and it works.
Almost like in the 70s, but like the really like forceful punk music, it was never meant to be listened to after the fact. It was, you were there experiencing it, and that was a big part of like of the performance, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. For those who were lucky enough to be there.
True. I was not quite born yet.
Yeah, so you had it on record. So in order to sort of reconstitute the excitement, the studio post-production was necessary. But again, it's not really overdubbing. It's more like editing and mixing.
Can we listen to one of the tracks just to,
yes,
to see what you're talking about?
Yeah, well, the most... wait, got any requests? No, okay. I guess we should start with the first track because this kind of exposes the method. You'll hear in this track, it's called Radio Family, you'll hear pieces of radio that get cut up.
Okay.
And in the middle of it, you hear a piece of radio where I get, it's some newscast and they're saying, attorneys for so-and-so say there was no family conspiracy to hack. And I get the words family conspiracy, I loop them, and I extract the sibilances, the family conspiracy. So those sounds get isolated and then they become part of the groove, and all of that is part of the track.
Okay.
So this is the first track on the record, and it's sort of the most educational.
Uh-oh.
And it goes something like this.
There's a panic look in his eye.
Come on, iTunes, don't fail me now.
iTunes, don't fail. It's just a WAV file.
What is iTunes doing?
Oh, well,
is it already
open? A preview.
Welcome to...
Oh, no, it looks like it's about to go.
Oh, thank you. There we go.
All right.
It was minimized and waiting for input because that makes sense. Thanks, Apple.
It seems to be playing already.
Is it playing?
Uh-oh. Should want me to grab a laptop or something? We could run it through...
I see the musical counter moving. The time is going forward within this musical track. I could narrate what's supposed to be happening.
You should continue to do that.
It starts with me tuning the dial as if it's the opening of one of my concerts. And then a piece of religious radio gets looped. And then that gets turned into little bits that form a groove. And that cuts quickly to the already made groove. So I basically shortcut maybe 10 minutes of... okay, now you can... Okay, so if you go back to the beginning... So we're in that...
Yeah, we hear it.
We're in that radio turns into beeping portion.
Yeah, if you can't tell, we do everything live.
Oh, yeah. So do I. We could start at the beginning, or we could just...
Yeah, can we go...
from the beginning. And are we turning the mics off, or...
And by the way, you need to eat dinner as a family at least 5 times a week. You need to reduce television time, have kids do Sudoku or crossword puzzles, eliminate all violent video games, take 3 or more years of foreign language, and Latin is my favorite one. Take 3 or more years of foreign language, and Latin is my favorite one.
We're back.
We are. That was phenomenal.
So, no, thanks.
So what I thought was really interesting is, so when you first start playing like the phrase with the family conspiracy,
right,
you get the full context of it.
Yes.
And then when you start doing the repetition of the family conspiracy, it almost like it becomes a lot more musical, and it almost removes its meaning.
Yeah.
And then you just like explode it apart, and then you get funky from there. I don't know. I thought that that was your intention pretty much. Like,
yes.
I
assume.
It was really cool. I like the way that works.
Oh, good. Thanks. Yeah, it's funny. I intended to do that, and it seemed to do that, and that's it. And you described it as I wanted a listener to just, wow, what do you know? Yeah. Of course, that was the chosen passage out of all the different concerts that I did. Mm-hmm. It was a concert with a good groove, and it was an example of that process that was a good one. And I call that the re-esser. I don't know if you know, in studio gear, there's this thing called the de-esser.
Okay.
Which gets rid of unwanted sibilances, mm-hmm. which are especially bad for vinyl, but they're still kind of bad for radio transmission, for one thing.
Yeah.
And so instead of the de-esser, which reduces those sibilances, I thought, okay, I'll call this the re-esser. It eliminates everything but the sibilance, and I cut mm-hmm. them into percussion.
Interesting.
Well, I like it. And yeah. I was amazed when I conceived of this and invented it, I figured, well, this is my best shot to get reasonable percussion sound from voice. But I had no idea that it would work out so well.
Yeah.
And then I heard some sounds that were so much like a snare. In fact, a lot like a Roland 808 snare, if you know that sound.
Mm-mm, no.
Roland 808, Roland 809, sorry. Ooh, I really stepped in it there. Roland 808, Roland 909. Those snares are iconic in dance music, especially what they call freestyle and Latin hip hop and electro.
Okay.
And my snare, which was made out of maybe the sound st or t
yeah.
from a voice, was so much like those Roland snares. And I realized this was answering a puzzle that had been in my mind since I was a little child, which is, why is the snare drum, which is a basic drum that has weird metallic springs stretched across tightly against the head, why is that such a seminal sound in rock music, or what to me then was just music,
mm-hmm.
or pop music? It's the backbeat, but it's not just the backbeat, it's the snare sound. And if it's a rim shot mm-hmm. or a tom-tom, that's the alternative. The main sound, the expected sound, is that snare drum.
Yeah.
And after I made the re-esser, I realized, oh, this is an articulation in the range and the timbre of a human voice. The essence of articulation is a high consonant, and that's what the re-esser is picking up, and that's what a snare drum is. And it kind of blew me away. Like, I don't want to be any more theoretical than I have to be, mm-hmm. Or that I sort of feel like I can't help it. And here was theory kind of coming at me from the sound and what I was experimenting with.
Basically, like tying everything together, voice and found sounds.
Yeah, and meaning and language, and it was a big moment for me, and it changed my feeling about pop music and about language.
How did you stumble upon this style of producing music?
stumble could be a shoe reference, but it doesn't have to be. You know, I've been working with found sound and radio since I started playing with tape loops. I've been playing with tape recorders since I was a little kid, and I got back into it when I was in college and I started making tape loops. And I just take sounds off the radio naturally. And then I was performing in clubs with tape loops that I would make very laboriously, and I would remix these multi-channel tape loops. So like one channel would have a synthesized bass, and another channel would have cut up pieces of sound, maybe have a recorded tape loop within the tape loop on another channel, and so forth. A melody, maybe me playing the drums, all recorded on this tape loop that would be exactly the length of two bars or four bars. It would be a groove, and I would mix the constituent parts of this multi-track loop kind of in the style of dub reggae.
Okay.
So I'd have only some of the tracks running in this looping, repetitive, hopefully hypnotic fashion, And then I would raise the level on another one of the tracks just momentarily and put a lot of echo on it, and that is more or less dub.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's not too reductive for the people out there that are big fans of dub. And I was doing this in nightclubs, and I was also playing around with gates where I would speak into a mic or just tap the mic and have it open up a gate so a completely different sound would come out. And I was doing some musical things and some, I don't know, vaudeville things with it. It was performance arty. And this was the 80s, the Lower East Side, the Pyramid Club. So there was a big premium on being on stage with a spotlight on you and having a persona and doing a very dynamic live show, which is not where electronic music is going these days, I guess, unless you're a big budget like Deadmau5 or Daft Punk, where it's a pyrotechnics.
Or like the whole, like the, I don't know if you know Dim Mock Records, but like all those DJs, like Bloody Beetroots, like they tend to, you know, the people that ride, like throw cakes in the crowd and jump on trampolines and ride.
No, I don't know that. Rash. I need to know that.
Yeah, look up the Bloody Beetroots.
I will. Bloody Beetroots.
Bloody Beetroots, Mastercraft. And then there's one more guy who's escaped. The person who throws cakes and rides Blow Up. Anyway, it's all performance, and it's not... Don't get me wrong, okay. They're very talented producers, but when they when they DJ, they're hitting play and kind of running amok.
Well, that's interesting. So maybe I could say that what I was doing is very in high contrast to some part of the DJ and electronic music scene.
Yeah.
But I was... you asked me the story of how I stumbled on this. So then one day... after using gates a lot in performance, which is different from sampling. Sampling didn't really exist then as we know it. The closest was what I was doing with the tape loops, with cutting up things physically by cutting tape. I was in a stereo store in Hoboken, New Jersey, and they had in the junk bin for $1 a wireless mic and the receiver. And I took it home, and it was extremely crappy. It was like unbelievably bad. It was almost 100% static. But if you screamed into it or whacked it, you could get something that would rise above the static. And so I thought, oh, this would be very clean if all I did was use it to trigger a gate. I'd have to mess with my threshold endlessly. And so then it became this shtick where I put the wireless mic inside some object. I used a roll of toilet paper, and then I used a shoe. And the shoe was something I could hit with a drumstick.
Okay.
And that started the shoe gate thing. And then years later, as I got more of a, became more of a concert composer and started performing at 8 instead of at midnight and going and performing in places where you sat down in a chair and read program notes, I made a rig that I called the musical shoes, and it was 4 shoes, not wireless, controlling gates. Mm-hmm. And those are with me still. And
the same shoes?
Well, some shoes have gone in and out of it, but they're basically the same.
Eventually the shoe wears out and you need to...
I don't know. There's actually one shoe that I was particularly fond of. I don't know what happened to it, but I have around 6 shoes in various states of repair.
Are they sneakers or like dress shoes?
No, they are wingtips or other very generic-looking men's shoes.
Okay.
And I thought of them as a very sort of ordinary, lowly, mundane... object, and you know they're connected to the ground, but then I realized shoes, especially women's shoes, are fashion, which is all about artifice, and it's not lowly and mundane, and it's not necessarily talking about working. And so I realized, oh, this really was a choice on my part, and is this like conceptually sound? And I don't know, I'm just going on instinct, and I like them, and people have sometimes offered me much more fashionable shoes, and I don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
I like only those very generic looking shoes, and if people Google me, you can see lots of pictures of them. They seem to say what I want.
Do you hit the top of the shoe or the sole of the shoe?
I hit the heel.
The heel.
They are mounted upside down on stands.
Okay.
And they're great to hit with drumsticks. I'm a drummer, so for years I've been drumming on the heels of my own shoes.
Have you ever gotten one of those shoes resold?
Like, well, they've
brought it to your local cobbler to get them?
Yeah, and there was one cobbler who broke the electronics because he didn't understand. It was one of those moments. I don't remember what else I did that day or what I did 10 minutes before or afterwards, but I remember that moment, and it was right when he was handing the shoe back to me. So he was done, and he was just going to show me something, and then he pulled it apart. But, you know, they've been repaired a million times.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, well, thanks. I like them.
Now, what about the steering wheel?
Well, I sat down quite a few years ago and figured out, what am I doing? What is next? And in about 5 minutes, I realized, oh, what's next is to make these grooves in real time in front of an audience using digital technology. And I was still completely analog at that point. This was the mid-90s. And my own performances weren't even MIDI in particular. They were basically analog gates and radio and some tape loops. And then I realized kind of all at once, I can do this digitally. And instead of creating a collage, spending 3 weeks, 4 weeks, it was getting longer and longer for me to build these. I was taking more and more time to build these. I challenged myself to make them in real time in front of an audience. And I knew I could do that with some digital technology somehow. And I would use the shoes, and then shortly after that I realized, oh, I need another controller. If I'm conceiving of a show and not just letting it sort of evolve, I need something more than just triggering shoes. I need a continuous controller. I need a knob. Mm-hmm. Let me have a giant knob. And so that became the steering wheel.
Okay.
And it is doing all kinds of continuous control, but I realized just about everything that the wheel does is roll things up and down. It's frequency, but frequency can mean a lot of different things. It can mean pitch, it can mean filter, it could also mean tempo, but it's still rolling things up and down. And the one exception is using the steering wheel as a turntable. And I do that too. But it's sort of curious that there's really these two categories. So actually on the track that we just heard at about 3 minutes and 45 seconds, there's a shoes and wheels solo. It's a melody, and it's sort of a plinky melody, like it sounds a cross between a xylophone and a, I don't know, harpsichord or something, but it's really some random piece of radio that I'm transposing with a wheel and triggering each note with a shoe.
Interesting. In your travels, have you come across another artist, Robert DeLong?
Oh boy, that name really rings a bell. Is there a nom de DJ of this person?
I'm not sure. I think he goes by that primarily.
Robert DeLong.
Yeah.
Say more.
He uses a lot less of shoes and a lot more of like electronic equipment.
But he uses shoes?
No.
Oh, okay.
He uses video game joysticks to do something very similar in terms of doing the rolling.
Oh, interesting.
So instead of, you know, a big wheel, he's got kind of up, down, left, right, and, you know, I guess circles, but...
Oh, okay.
Very similar.
The game controller is making a certain statement.
I would think so,
which I appreciate. Yeah, but for me, it had to be more timeless and functional. I guess it's a little retro, but above all, a giant knob.
Yeah.
To make it performative. And what I didn't realize, and I was already absolutely sold, I had to have the giant knob. I had some help building it. And did you know that an optical encoder can be built very inexpensively? You can get these things, and they're so robust. The guy that helped me make it said to me, you know, this encoder, if it was, what did he say? He said, this encoder is normally in use in a factory where they maybe have to maintain it every few years. This would be the equivalent of you performing 20 times a year for the next 25 years. Mm-hmm. This thing is completely robust. But anyway, the thing that I didn't realize is I can play melodies on this thing. I mean, I knew enough to make it so that a full circle was an octave. And so then a quarter circle is exactly a minor third. But I didn't realize I'm going to play melodies on this thing. And so now I practice the wheel. And I get rusty, and then I have to get good again. And, I get it in my body. It's the whole thing is an instrument that I need to master. It is versatile enough so that it is hard enough and you can't just get up there and make a groove sound good. But that is inherent in an instrument that is as flexible as I mean for this to be.
Mm-hmm. You said it was a Buick steering wheel?
As it happens, yeah.
Is there any special meaning to the Buick steering wheel?
No, and I have some other spare one somewhere. And the true story of how I got it is almost disappointing because I was figuring I'm going to go to a junkyard. But then while I was in this period, I was asked to do a gig at a pop-up shop. It was a storefront on Union Square in New York to promote some movie, and it had an automotive theme. So they had actual steering wheels in this venue, in this club. And when they closed, because it was a pop-up thing, it wasn't supposed to last, I grabbed two of the steering wheels, which is good for me, and it's a real steering wheel, so it's legit.
Yeah, yeah.
It just sort of felt funny, like, wait a minute. Don't I have to get inside a car in order to
pull it?
This right? Yeah, but no.
What's the word? Like, kismet? Is that the right word? Like, this, the wheels just fell in your lap?
Yes, the wheels were... the wheels turned and... the wheels fell.
Well, more like you probably pried it off the wall. But.
Yeah, yeah. There's some there's some good metaphor in there that we're just not quite hitting, but yeah. Exactly.
How are we doing for time?
We're doing pretty good. It is currently 5:36 Eastern.
Let's stick with Eastern.
Do we want to do another track?
Oh, I'd be perfectly game. Now we have the 9-minute title track.
Okay.
We could do that. It's called Seize the Means, and that's the name of the album. Or we could do a shorter track. This is what's called doing it live, right? We didn't pre-decide what this... I didn't even pre-decide what this would be.
If we did the longer track that puts us at 45, that wouldn't necessarily play us out, right?
No, I mean...
We're not all played out?
We could... Could we do, like, one shorter track, and then we'll close with the longer one?
Absolutely. Let's do all we want to do. So, what would be good? Any requests? There's someone here.
Sorry?
Okay, there's a request for the last track.
Okay.
It is the relief after the mayhem of the penultimate track. It's called Get Off at Halsey Street. And it is almost the opposite of the opening track because you can't really tell that it was performed live. It is the nice moments from one performance. There's no noticeable shoe solo in it. You don't hear the radio being grabbed. What you hear is a groove that's completely constructed of radio.
Okay.
All right. Let's kick this off. We'll be right back.
There might be, actually.
So so I brought this up while we were listening to the track, and what I find really hard to believe is, like, the sound is so, it fits and it sounds so clean that I find it, like, I feel like someone could go to a studio and if they put it together, I'd be like, if it was me and I created that, like, after weeks of work, I'd be very pleased with the end result. And, like, it seems so hard to believe that, like, at that moment, you pulled those sounds out of the air, like, out of the ether, I said before, and created something organically that people just had to dance to at the time. I'm like a little, like, speechless. I find it...
You speechless?
Yeah, I mean, I find it hard to believe that it's just, it seems like magic to me. Like, it seems like magic.
Oh, well, come to the show tomorrow night.
I will be there.
Yeah, by the way, can I promote the show?
No, of course, yeah. That's why we have you here.
I want to promote the album, too. So I'm performing as part of the Hope concert tomorrow night on the ground floor of the hotel. And if you're registered for Hope, it's free. But it is open to the public, $12. But if you go both tonight and tomorrow night, it's only $18 for both nights. Here at the Hotel Pennsylvania, where Hope is taking place. But let me answer your question. It's actually your comment. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Actually, a lot of work went into the programming and rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think, in as much as these tracks work, and it works, they're working for you, which is nice, they are teaching a lesson, I think, about chance and found sound. Yeah. Is one of the things I wanted to prove, that it seems better than chance somehow. Admittedly, I went for the best shows out
of course,
200,
yeah.
But still, it somehow we make sense out of things more than we think. Or maybe it's synchronicity in the Jungian sense, or maybe I'm some sort of a great improviser and I chose the right things. I attribute it mostly to the algorithms, some of my improvising talent maybe, but definitely that people don't understand how random choices will have a tendency to make sense, because that's how the world works, I think.
Okay.
And one of the lessons that I learned was that if I'm taking two different songs, or a commercial and a song, or a voice and a song, and I want them to work together tonally, well, it's kind of a crapshoot, right? They're not necessarily going to combine. You can have dissonance in a way that's just not fun. And so I carefully built this thing I call the D-pitcher, which is using just ring modulation, actually, to take any one of these constituent parts that I grabbed off the air and make all the pitches become like weird synth sounds, so that I didn't worry that these two different things that I grabbed would collide tonally.
Mm-hmm.
I hardly ever have to use it. Not only that, but the transposing effect that I have with the wheel, I very often don't have to use that to make these two things off the radio work together, and they just happen to be on the radio close enough together in time so that I pick them up during one show, and that's it. And it amazed me, and my ear is, I have good ear, but I'm not so musically adventurous that any kind of dissonance is good for me. My sense of musicality, what's going to be funky, I like to think is not so far off from yours. So in other words, that's just to bolster my point that this chant stuff is just works better than you could ever dream. And I'm culling it, I'm framing it, and then I'm doing all the post-production so that people can hear that. And that's one of the things that excites me about it. It also says something about radio, because this is 99% commercial radio. There's snippets of religious radio in there that's not quite, and there's some news and stuff. But it's basically all commercial radio, so it's not completely random. But as far as tonality is concerned...
Oh, that is a good point. Yeah, a lot of it is going to be similar tonality because it is commercial radio.
Yeah, similar to a point. And I haven't really analyzed, like, is everybody doing things in G and in B flat?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a guitarist. I don't think in terms of those limitations. Mm-hmm. If anything, I'm a keyboardist. And, you know, people don't do a lot of things in... I don't know, what's a key that people don't use a lot? C sharp? But they use, you know, in equal temperament in keyboard music, they're kind of all created equal.
Yeah. But I mean, I rarely in top 40 radio do you hear like I don't know what you call, like, from a musical standpoint, but sounds that are unpleasant or make you feel down, they tend to be songs that kind of, or tones that are, like, uplifting, you know?
I suppose, although there's a lot of pain in popular music.
True.
Pain sells. Michael Jackson is a huge idol. Nirvana was so well loved.
But you still have to, like, when push came to shove, there was still a, I mean, maybe not happiness in terms of the message, but the tonality of it wasn't like a depressing tonality.
Yeah, I think that's true. And a group like Swans doesn't get the same airplay as normal pop music.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm more apt to get normal pop music. Yeah, that's another funny thing that people would say to me, how on earth did you get that? That's so cool. But what they liked about it was that it was iconic. And so what's iconic is what's going to be on the air a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this sort of natural, like, you know, it's sort of like straight from the box irony and humor. You know, you take random stuff off the radio, you're going to get this, you're most likely to get the stuff that comes up a lot, because that's just odds. And so people tend to get a big kick out of the wacky things that come up on the radio, and they tend to be the things that come up a lot.
Do we have enough time for that?
Yeah.
The title track, and then we'll play that out?
Yeah.
I'm game.
Okay.
So can I just say, the name of the album is Seize the Means, and it's coming out September 30th, 2016, on the Danish label Klang. And you could go to klang.dk or just Google Radio Wonderland.
And we'll find it.
You'll find it.
And then you're playing tomorrow night. Do you know what time?
Well, I'm the last on the bill tomorrow. The concerts start at 10. There are four acts, so...
And the last is always the best, so...
Well, I don't know about
Stay
that.
For
the
whole
last
thing.
Is definitely the last. And so I'm guessing around 11:45.
Okay. I'll be there. With
All
bells
right.
on.
Maybe okay.
Maybe a little tipsy.
Probably a lot
Probably
tipsy.
A lot tipsy.
Yeah. I think it's probably so far that you wouldn't classify as tipsy.
No.
No. Beyond tipsy.
We'll see.
Tipsy.
All right. I'll be looking out for this. Oh, here it comes. Thanks for having me, by the way.
No, it's a great time.
Twice in a row.
You're always welcome.
Yes.
All right. Always provided that it's the Hope Conference and Radio Statler's on the air.
Well, yeah, forever and ever.
Yeah.
Well, for the entirety of the con.
Yeah.
Minus an hour.
So we want Seize the Means Part 1. It's the monster one. Title track.
Okay, and here we go. Power.
purchases. No purchases. No power.
Now let's check the traffic, here's Debbie D.